Hi, everyone, and welcome back to the Mind Movement Health Podcast. I'm your host, Kate Boyle. And before we dive into this week's episode, if you haven't subscribed to the podcast yet, please head on over to your favorite podcast app and hit the subscribe button now. This tells everybody else that this is a great podcast to listen to, and I'd be so grateful if you did. Okay, this week on the show, I have a special guest, Alison Blatt. Now, Alison is a distinguished health writer, speaker, and lecturer, and renowned for her contributions to the field of women's health, particularly in menopause management for women aged over 40 and beyond. With over 30 years of experience in the health and wellness industry, she is an award-winning nutritional therapist and beauty therapist. And today we are going to dive into food, beauty, menopause, and so much more. So let's have a listen in to our conversation. Hi, I'm Kate Boyle, and welcome to the Mind Movement Health Podcast. Each week, I'll be bringing you health information from diet and lifestyle to movement and nutrition. My aim is to bring you bite-sized pieces of information that you can instigate into your everyday life to change your health. Hi, everyone. Welcome back to the podcast. Alison, welcome to the show.
Oh, thank you for having me here, Kate. It's a pleasure talking to you.
Well, I always love chatting about nutrition and health. And today we're going to be diving into a little bit of nutrition and beauty in your specialized areas. But before we do, can you introduce yourself to our listeners?
Yes, my name's Alison Blatt, and I am a registered nutritional therapist and also a beauty therapist. I've been working in the health and wellness industry for, over 30 years now, and I have my own nutritional therapy clinic where I work with women worldwide, specifically focusing on women 40 plus. So, you know, that stage in a woman's life, perimenopause, menopause, and postmenopause. I'm working with lifestyle, nutrition, and mindset using the functional medicine approach to make these women feel great and have a wonderful rest of their lives. Because, you know, when we're in postmenopause, we're living a lot longer than we used to. So it's important that you feel great.
Yeah, 100% agree. And, you know, I was just talking to somebody the other day and they were sort of saying that, you know, depending on when you go through, you know, menopause now, you could have up to half of your life in postmenopause, essentially. So it's a big part of our life as women. And there's definitely more information that's come out about menopause in the last few years. But I think the more that we can talk about it, the better, because the more empowering it is for women to know what to do when we get to this stage.
Yeah, I totally agree with you, Kate. It's you know, when you think about it, there's three big hormonal events in a woman's life: adolescence, you know, puberty. We all talk about that, don't we? And then we have pregnancy, which is, you know, everybody knows about that. And then it's just silence. This big kind of negativity surrounded around menopause, and menopause is a huge shift in women's hormones. And like you say, it is getting better in Europe, where I live, especially in the United Kingdom. There's a bit of a menopause revolution going on. Women have just had enough and they want to be listened to. So it's getting better, but we still need to talk about it, because every woman should understand. You know, because every woman's going to go through it, they should have that knowledge, because knowledge is power, and you can really take control of your health if you understand what is actually happening.
Agree. So what is happening to our bodies and hormonally when women start to go through perimenopause and then eventually menopause?
Yeah. So we can call it the menopause transition, because it is a transition. And it's in different stages. You've got perimenopause, which is first, you then have menopause, and then you have something called postmenopause. And this takes place over many years, and it's very individual, depending on the woman. So the first stage is called perimenopause. And this, on average, happens at the age of 45, can happen younger, can happen later. And this is really where things, your hormones start to fluctuate quite greatly in some women. But you're still fertile. You're still having periods every month. So it's just things become unsettled. You know, a lot of women in perimenopause can be estrogen dominant, which means that your estrogen levels are high and your progesterone levels can be quite low. And it can trigger off the menopausal symptoms. So, you know, a classic sign that you're in perimenopause would be having like hot flashes. You know, that's a typical sign of menopause. But it kind of, and I see that in so many of my clients, that it kind of creeps up on you. And very few women, when they're in that age group and start having the odd symptom, put it down to menopause. They think it's life in general, you know, stress. We're all very stressed, aren't we? Children, work, looking after a family, all of these things, you know, can make you feel exhausted. But then on top of that, you've got perimenopause. And some women feel really terrible. So that's the perimenopause. And this gradually goes on till we go into what we call menopause. And menopause, on average, happens at the age of 51. And this is where your hormones have declined. So as you're going through perimenopause, your progesterone and your estrogen are declining. And when you haven't had a period, so when you haven't menstruated for a year consecutively, you are then in menopause. And, you know, it's quite interesting because menopause really, when you think about it, is just one day. Because all the time after that day when you haven't menstruated for a year, you're in postmenopause. So menopause happens at the age of 51. When you haven't menstruated. And this means that your estrogen and your progesterone levels are very low. You know, your body, well, you do actually still produce a very small amount from your adrenal glands, which sit on top of your kidneys, but your ovaries don't function anymore. They've stopped functioning. And then after menopause, you're in postmenopause. And this is the rest of a woman's life. And as we were saying, you know, we're living a lot longer. So it can be 30 plus years. And what we have to think about in postmenopause is that, you know, we don't have our hormones. We don't have estrogen and progesterone. And this can make us vulnerable or at a higher risk for certain chronic diseases such as osteoporosis, cardiovascular disease, bone health, you know, really osteopenia as well as osteoporosis. And also possibly, there's a big question mark here because more research is needed, but possibly there could be some link between dementia. They don't know this. There's research going on, but when we look at dementia, it's the percentages are much higher in women, and they're much higher in women around that age group. You know, is there some sort of connection between estrogen and our brain health? Because estrogen is so important. Estrogen and progesterone are crucial hormones. And I think we've always thought of them as sex hormones, haven't we? But they're not. They're not. They're responsible for so many other things in the body. So, you know, that's the menopause transition, perimenopause, menopause, and then postmenopause.
Mm. Well, you touched on so many things there because estrogen is so protective, you know, as you said, for our bone health, our brain health, our cardiovascular health. So the question really comes down to if these levels are starting to decline and we've got so much of our life postmenopause to live without these hormones, what are the sort of lifestyle things we can be doing to really support our bodies through this time?
Yeah, great, great question. And, you know, what we have to remember is that there isn't anything that you can eat or do that will actually replace your hormones. The only thing that will replace your hormones is hormone replacement therapy. So, you know, that, I mean, I'm not a doctor. Obviously, you need to go to your doctor to talk about that if that is something that you're interested in. But when we look at nutrition, we look at lifestyle, mindset, you know, all of these things together can really help you get through this. And if you look after yourself the best that you can, you will find that you'll have a better menopause transition. Because if we look at food, you know, it's shown in research that if you have a diet full of processed foods, so foods that have got a lot of refined sugars and damaged fats and all of those sort of things in, that they can make menopausal symptoms worse. Sugar, you know, you really need to cut back on ultra processed foods, because they make your hormones unbalanced. You know, they cause high blood sugar levels. They're just not good for your health in general. So that is something really that women should think about. I understand that it's not easy because of the food environment that we live in. But when you come into the menopause transition, you just have to look after yourself a bit better. You know, I always say that you've got this 80-20% rule, that, you know, if you're healthy and you eat well and you exercise and do all the things that you should, 80% of your life, you know, you've got the 20% that you can, you know, indulge a bit and do the things and have a glass of wine or a piece of cake. But really, when you come into menopause, it's 90-10. You have to make that extra effort, because if you don't, you will notice it. And people always say to, oh, no, that's not true. But it is. And I mean, I myself am in perimenopause, and you just can't get away with doing what you did when you were younger. It just all catches up with you. So as far as food, if we're looking at food, removing or reducing sugar, you really want to work on blood sugar balance, because when we're eating a lot of refined carbohydrates and sugars, this spikes our blood sugar, and this sets off a lot of events in the body, including insulin secretion, which is a hormone that looks after the glucose in our system. And it can make you feel terrible, make you feel irritated. It stores fat, insulin. You know, it's another sign of menopause, is that we start to get fat around the belly area in particular. So really looking at your diet, eating whole foods, so nothing that comes in a packet with 20-30 ingredients on, and, you know, looking at protein. Protein is something that women in general, we don't eat enough of. And as we age, we need protein. We need it to keep our muscles. We lose muscles as we age. So we need protein roughly around a palm size with every meal. And when I talk about protein, if you eat meat, you know, you're looking at chicken, you know, all the different meat products. Dairy contains protein. If you don't eat meat, then you can look at soya products like tofu, tempeh, all of those things that are good protein sources. And then fats. Now, everybody, I know I grew up in an era where fat was, you know, nobody ate fat. It was this complete fat-free era, which, interestingly, we've discovered now through research that was not right at all. And we're seeing the results of it in the health of the world, really, because we've had this basically high carbohydrate sugar diet for so many years. Fats are good, but it's the sort of fat that you eat. You know, you want to be thinking of healthy fats like olive oil, nuts and seeds, avocados, good old butter. There's nothing wrong with good old butter. Of course, in moderation, but butter is actually a good fat to cook with, to fry with and things. You know, we want to get away from all these what we call seed oils, like damaged oils that can cause inflammation in the body. So eating your protein, your fat, and then, you know, the big discussion about carbohydrates, there's a lot of discussion, isn't there, about, oh, we should all stop eating carbohydrates. And as a nutritional therapist, what I talk about is what is evidence-based. And, you know, there is evidence that cutting down on carbohydrates can be beneficial for many things, including weight management. And what I've seen in my clients is that we don't, because we're aging, we've got the aging process going on in the background as well. We can't blame everything on menopause, that it changes your metabolism. There's a lot of metabolic effects that happen in the body as we age, and also because of the decline in hormones. So we don't quite need, we need to think of portion size. We don't need as much food as we ate when we were younger. So cutting back on carbohydrates, I'm not a person that believes you should go completely carbohydrate free, but looking at your carbohydrates and what you actually eat. So if you looked at your plate, you know, you'd have your protein, you'd have your healthy fat, and then getting your carbohydrates predominantly from vegetables. You know, half of your plate can be vegetables and salads and all of those things, and reducing, you know, potatoes, rice, you know, bread, all of those things you can really cut down. I've got nothing against potatoes, but if you're looking at weight management, or you really want to keep your blood sugar balanced, then it's better to get your carbohydrates from vegetables for a menopausal woman. There's a diet called the Mediterranean style diet, which always in all research comes up as the healthiest way to eat. And that's really what I've just been saying. It's fish, meat, nuts and seeds, legumes, lots of fruit and vegetables, healthy fats. And there's really no processed refined foods at all, and very little, the odd glass of red wine and a little bit of red meat, but very little. So that style of eating is very beneficial for our overall health.
And it is really going back to that whole food diet, you know, not, like you said, lots of packets and different ingredients and additives and preservatives and chemicals. It's really buying the fruit, the veg, and the pulses and the grains as they are, and then cooking them, preferably at home, simply, and putting them together.
Yeah, it doesn't have to be. I'm a big believer in making things simple. It really doesn't have to be complicated. You know, you could make, for example, a chicken salad. All you need is, I roast a chicken sometimes on a Sunday and I have that in the fridge. So on Monday evening, you just have a chicken breast with some salad and some nuts. It's all about preparation, but you don't have to be cooking all these fancy meals every evening. It's very easy to eat healthily and not spend loads of time in the kitchen. And it's exactly as you said, it's really just getting back to basics. And it's something that, you know, we need to really, there's so much information out about how detrimental ultra processed foods are for our health. So I think you have to make that choice that I choose not to eat those foods because they don't nourish my body. I want to eat nourishing foods that are going to make me feel great.
I agree. Everything you've been saying so far is what I say to all of my clients as well. And I do want to touch on, with you being a beauty therapist and we're talking about nourishing our body, when it comes to skin, this is something, you know, I think everyone is conscious of, women in particular, and there's obviously changes that will occur to our skin as we start to enter menopause. So can you expand on, you know, what those changes are and how to best look after our skin as we start to age?
Yeah, skin, I get that asked a lot, because there are as many symptoms in menopause. You do see skin changes. And it's very interesting, because I think people don't necessarily relate, you know, estrogen and progesterone and testosterone to skin health. And because of the decline in these hormones, we see things happening. And just to mention there, when I talk about testosterone, testosterone isn't really so much affected by menopause. Our testosterone levels tend to decline gradually as we age. So that's kind of going on alongside, which has an effect on certain aspects of our health and our skin health as well. So what happens to our skin? We can see, for example, we can start seeing pigmentation, so darker areas on the skin. We can start seeing sagging, fine lines and wrinkles, dry skin. That's a really common thing, because estrogen actually is needed to regulate our sebaceous flow, which is the oil that our skin produces. It's also needed for the production of hyaluronic acid. And hyaluronic acid is this amazing, it's actually produced by the body, but it just holds water and moisture. So that's what keeps our skin lovely and moist. And it also helps to regulate what we call melanocytes, which is which cause pigmentation on our skin. They keep when we sunbathe, that's what we go brown. That's what our melanocytes are doing, because it's really there for protection against the sun. So we can see an imbalance in pigmentation. We can suddenly develop allergies that we never had before. You know, you could be using a product that you've had for many, many years, and all of a sudden you can't use it anymore, because estrogen has a protective effect and it helps to modulate our immune system. And there's also things like, I actually wrote a blog about this, that your eyelashes and eyebrows start to thin, which is terrible, isn't it? I mean, we love our eyelashes. We don't want that.
I wouldn't mind a bit of thinning in my eyebrows. I've always had big, because they're waxed, because they're always been big and thick. So you know what? That change I'm okay with, but not the eyelashes. I want to keep the eyelashes.
I want to keep them. So there's a lot of things going on there. And like I say, these hormones are needed for our skin health. And we can get we lose the tone in our skin. You know, it's not as firm as it used to be. And estrogen is needed for the synthesis of collagen. And collagen is really what, you know, it's a big factor in our skin. Collagen and elastin, you know, they're what give our skin the structure that keeps it nice and firm. And we lose 30% of collagen in our skin in the first 5 years of menopause. So I hear a lot of my clients say, gosh, you know, I wake up in the morning and look in the mirror and I just think, what happened? That expression, you age overnight. And your skin becomes just a bit puffier in the mornings. You can get, you know, dark circles and fine lines around the eye area. So that's what can happen. Oh, yes, and acne. You know, just to add something else in there, you can get perimenopausal acne, which obviously is very distressful. This predominantly, there's many factors that come into play, but that something that can cause this is testosterone dominance. Because what happens in perimenopause, because of all the fluctuation in hormones, testosterone can become dominant, and this can trigger off acne. And it can also, another lovely thing while we're talking about it, you can, you know, you lose hair where you want it, and you gain it where you don't. So you can find you start getting, you know, the odd whiskers on your chin and upper lip, and you lose hair. That's actually very distressing for women, of course, that, you know, you're losing hair on your head as well. Your hair can become much thinner. So that there are a lot of things. And itchy skin, that's another thing that a lot of women complain of in menopause, that their skin becomes very itchy. You know, you can wake up at night and you just want to scratch. Yes. So what can you do? There are many things that you can do. The first thing, when we're looking at aging of the skin, we want to, again, going back to sugar, there's something which sounds very unattractive called sugar sag. And sugar sag, you know, if you can see in your skin when you've been eating a lot of sugar, because sugar actually ages the skin. There's a process called glycation. And what glycation is when we eat a lot of sugar, when we've got a lot of sugar, excess glucose in our blood system, it binds with protein. And this process is called glycation. And this isn't good. We don't want this, because it produces something called glycation end products. And these basically break down collagen and elastin. So you can find, that's why it's called sugar sag, because you can just see how sugar is so detrimental and makes the skin. I know, it's horrible, isn't it? If that doesn't want to make you stop eating sugar, I don't know what will. So cutting down on sugar is crucial for skin health. And then another really big thing is, you know, eating your protein. We need protein to keep our skin healthy. And then eating a colourful diet, you know, going back to the Mediterranean style diet, we need phytonutrients. what we call phytochemicals for our skin, because they help with reduce free radicals, which aren't good. They can damage the skin. Antioxidants, those sort of foods that contain these wonderful ingredients. And a lot of them are in colourful foods, you know, like all your different colourful vegetables, berries, you know, fruits, etc. Wonderful for skin health. Because you need vitamin C as well for skin health. And that can be found in a lot of different fruits and vegetables. Because vitamin C is very important for collagen synthesis. So it's really, you know, the skin health diet is very similar to what we were talking about earlier. Getting rid of sugar, you know, cooking from scratch, making sure you're getting all your vitamins and minerals via what you eat. Vitamin C is very important for skin health. Vitamin E, you know, vitamin D, all of those things we really need for the integrity of our skin. And also one big thing for skin is to use a sun protection factor. Very, very important. And you should use it daily, you know, every day of the year, because even if you don't live in a sunny environment, you want to protect your skin from everything else. You know, even when you're sat in front of a computer, even if you're just going outside, you really want to protect your skin. And what research is saying that we need a SPF 30 plus now to protect our skin. And a lot of, you know, skincare products have advanced so much that, you know, a good day cream will have SPF 30 in. So you don't need to be using a separate sunscreen product unless you're actually on holiday on the beach or something. It's enough with a day cream. And then we need moisture. So drinking water. I mean, that sounds very basic, but everybody knows that, well, virtually everybody knows we should drink water, but we don't drink. We tend to forget, you know, we're busy, but drinking water is very important for overall health and certainly for skin health. And then really looking at a good skincare routine for your skin type. So getting advice from a professional, sunscreen, as we spoke about, but hydrating the skin. You know, the skin can really become dry during menopause. The hyaluronic acid that I spoke about earlier, that is a wonderful ingredient. And that is found in quite a few different products. And that is really great because it hydrates the skin so much. And another ingredient that I'm a big fan of is retinol, which is vitamin A. And that is for women as we age, can really be fantastic It helps with the structure of the skin. It helps to exfoliate the skin, to remove dead skin cells, and also helps to moisturize the skin. Just one area of caution with that, with retinol products. If you're not used to using them, take it easy, because if you have to kind of break your skin in. So, for example, just use it twice a week in the beginning, and absolutely not in the day in with sun. That's a product that you should use in the evening, because it's not good to have retinol on your skin in sunlight. So that's some of the things. And I mean, there's many, many other things you can do with the skin, but it's taking that time to look after your skin. And I think probably moisture is one of the most important things, is really keeping that moisture, using a day cream, using a moisturizing serum, a night cream. All of those things will really help with skin health.
Oh, good, because I'm doing all of it. Everything I can.
You've got lovely skin. Your skin looks amazing.
Oh, thank you. It's funny. I never think much of my skin, but lots of people always say when they meet me, they're like, oh, you've got really nice skin. And what I want to say on that is what you said to start with is food first. You didn't go to the skincare routine first. You started with the food, and that's where I would say, you know, to people, I think most people would think about their skin routine first when it comes to skin, rather than thinking about, you know, what they're actually actually putting into their body. And I don't think my, you know, I do what everybody else, you know, I tone and I moisturize and, you know, use my anti-wrinkle cream and I use a retinol, all of the things you just mentioned. But I would say first and foremost, it's my diet that's dialed in. I don't eat a lot of processed foods, you know, everything that you've mentioned, that's my diet essentially. So I think that's, you know, a great place when people are thinking about their skin, think about the diet first. And, you know, skincare is important, but, you know, what you're putting in is really what's going to, you know, show up in your skin essentially. Hi, everyone. I'm interrupting this podcast episode to invite you to come and join me for my Get Back Into Shape private podcast series. Now, this series is a totally free series that will be running between the 17th and 23rd of April, where I'll share four private podcasts, one every second day, with my best tips and strategies for making your weight loss and fitness journey a success. Our first podcast will be about shifting the weight that just won't budge. Our second private podcast will be about switching your motivation and mindset for success. Our third private podcast will be about creating a simple exercise routine you love. And our fourth podcast will be about overcoming pain and moving with strength and freedom. So if you'd like to join this free private podcast series, then head on over to the show notes and sign up now. I can't wait to see you join and to learn some of the strategies that I use with my clients every day to help them get success for their health and fitness.
Yeah, it shows, doesn't it? You know, if you're a healthy person and you eat well and you know you do all the lifestyle things, it shows in your skin. You know, it's the skin is affected not only by what we eat and what we do on the inside, but it is actually very interesting. The science is showing now that how our skin is affected by our emotional well-being. There's something called psychodermatology, where they're looking at the connection between our like emotional health or our mental health and how it affects our skin. And it does, doesn't it? If someone's like glowing and happy, you can see it in their skin. Whereas if someone is maybe depressed or, you know, not well emotionally, you see it in the skin. So there's definitely a connection there as well.
That's a really interesting sort of field that is obviously emerging, but it makes total sense when you say it like that.
Yeah, there's actually another thing that's fascinating called neurocosmetics. And this is looking at taking it even further, where they're looking at ingredients. There was something called neuropeptides that can work, you know, when you apply them to the skin, they will have an effect on our neurotransmitters, and that how that will not only affect how we feel, but will affect our skin. That's a very new area, but we see how our emotional well-being affects also how our skin looks.
And whilst we're sort of talking about vitamin C and collagen, do you recommend to any of your clients to take collagen as a supplement as they age? Because I know there is some research out there. There's not a heap of research. It is coming out. But I have spoken to a beauty therapist, and she has said, you know, she's gotten a few of her clients to start to take collagen and they've noticed huge differences in their skin just from making that change.
Yeah, that's a great question. Funny enough, I was talking about this. Yeah, someone asked me this yesterday. It's so true what you said, Kate, that, you know, there's not quite enough evidence there when it comes to, you know, skin and hair and nails. But when we look at what we do know with the evidence, that is that taking collagen can be beneficial for like joints, you know, like our joints health. Because, you know, collagen is the building blocks of the body. So it's a bit, we haven't got the research to back it up. But however, I exactly the same as you said, that I've seen in clients that have asked me, and I'm very, you know, I always say, if you're going to use a collagen supplement, you have to buy a good one. You know, you have to make sure it's got all the right collagens in there. And they have seen an effect. They've seen a difference in their hair strangely enough, and also in the texture of their skin, so the firmness of their skin. So, you know, if it helps, absolutely, I think that. But it's still, it would be nice to have that research there to back it up, because there are so many collagen products on the market now, aren't they, claiming that, you know, if you take this, it's going to totally alter your skin and everything. But yeah, clients have seen a difference.
Mm. Well, I think it's, you know, I always say to my clients, dial in all the diet and the lifestyle stuff first, you know, and you can get collagen through your diet, you know, if you're cooking some stews up and, you know, you've got those nice bones and we're getting that gelatin and bone broth and, you know, all of these things, if you're including those types of foods, you're getting some. Then if you're kind of doing all that and you've got the money to afford, you know, a collagen supplement, you're interested, then look into it. Because as far as supplements, you know, go, collagen can be quite pricey, especially when you're looking at, you know, the better organic brands and things. You know, a small tubs here in Australia is around about $50 or $60. Mm-hmm. So that, you know, can be quite, you know, an expense. So dialing in everything first, and then, you know, I say to people, you can definitely try collagen, you know, add it in. If you've got the affordability and stuff, then go for it. But, you know, those basics, as we've been talking about, is really foundational to begin with.
Yeah, totally agree. And it is expensive, collagen. And, you know, you're going to be taking it every day, and it comes in quite the, you know, a small tub, but, you know, you get through that. So yeah, totally agree. If you can get it from food, which bone broth, I love bone broth, you know, making your own bone broth is very rich in collagen. So yeah, but it's, you know, if someone wants to try, fine. But it, like I say, it's a costly thing.
Yeah. For sure. Now, when it comes to our brain health, what are some of the things that we could be doing to help protect that further as we sort of enter menopause? Because I know a lot of the sort of symptoms that people say, they start to get like brain fog or their memory doesn't seem as sharp. And I know there's a link there, as you said, research is coming out to show that there may be a link between our estrogen levels. So are there things that, you know, we can kind of be doing to help with our brain health as well?
Yeah, but brain fog and lack of focus and memory is a big thing, and it's very distressing. And I mean, I can say one of the worst symptoms for me that I've experienced through perimenopause is just that just fuzziness. And it's horrible. And you can't, you know, you can't remember things that you could remember before. You know, you can walk into a room and suddenly think, why did I come in here? And, you know, it's going back to how important estrogen is. We have estrogen receptors all over the body, including the brain. Estrogen and progesterone. So these receptors are the one, I mean, what is a hormone? It's a messenger, isn't it? So the estrogen, for example, would lock onto the receptor in the brain and give it that message, whatever that would be, telling the brain to do something. So when we don't have estrogen anymore, you know, these receptors in the brain are there going, oh, well, what am I supposed to do? You're not telling me a message. And that's when we can see these symptoms coming in, like brain fog, lack of focus, memory, you know, anxiety, all of those things. Anxiety is a big menopausal symptom. A lot of women suffer from that. And it's distressing. And it's worrying, isn't it? You think, what's the matter with me? You know, is this something else? And it goes back, you know, again, it goes back to thinking, okay, well, how can I look after my brain? And fats, one thing in particular that we need to make sure that we're getting enough in our diet is the omega fatty acids. They are very important for brain function and brain health. In particular, omega 3, DHA, which is in the omega 3 fatty acid. And this is, you know, your brain is made up of fat virtually, you know, and water. Those things. So if you eat a very low fat diet, or you don't eat fatty fish, because omega 3 is found in fatty fish, you really should. And I'm not a huge, you know, I don't promote supplements. They're absolutely necessary in some cases. But if you're not eating fatty fish and not getting enough omega-3, then you should really think about maybe taking a supplement because it is so important for brain health. And you can, if you don't eat fish, there are supplements made from algae, from seaweed. Crucial for brain health, very, very crucial. And I actually read a research the other day, you know, even saying this even more, that we're a lot of people are deficient in omega-3, and this is really having an effect on our brain health. Vitamin D is very important also for cognitive function. And vitamin D is a vitamin that can be hard to get, especially where I live in Northern Europe, where it's dark in the winters, because you need sunlight to synthesize and produce vitamin D. And it's quite hard to get from our diet in enough quantities. So vitamin D, again, could be something that you could look at supplementing. And then, you know, the B vitamins are very crucial for brain health, B6, B12, folate. Very important for cognitive function. So really making sure that you're getting them from, they're in meat, they're in green leafy vegetables. So those vitamins, obviously you need to be getting lots of others as well, but those ones in particular are really what we should be looking at for brain health. And also, again, you know, good old sugar. It goes back to blood sugar management because if you've got high insulin levels, it's been shown to be detrimental for brain health. And then another huge area, which you could do a whole podcast on, is stress management. You know, making sure that we're managing our stress, because we tend to live in a society, don't we, where everybody's suffering from chronic stress. And the long-term effects of this can be very detrimental to health. And it's certainly when you're going through menopause, you know, you can become anxious. You can be, you know, your emotional well-being can be affected. And if you've got chronic stress on top of that, it can just be overwhelming. And when we are stressed, we release stress hormones, which can have an effect on our well-being and also our brain and cognitive health.
Well, you know, and also that sort of age of, you know, say menopause is starting around 51, it's also usually a transition stage where you may have like kids that have grown up and they're starting to move out. So, you know, your sort of environment, the relationships are changing in your life. So if you've got hormones going everywhere and then some of these biggest sort of milestones that, you know, happen in life are occurring at the same time, or maybe you've got, you know, parents that may be, you know, getting to that later stage of life and they're unwell, you know, there's some big things can all happen at once.
Yeah, exactly. It's everything happens. It does in the 40s, late 40s, early 50s, everything can come together, can't it? And then when you suddenly on top of that start getting all these menopausal symptoms or problems, it can just become overwhelming. And I think a lot of clients that I work with are at that stage that they're just exhausted and don't know what to do, and they're stressed, and you know, it's, they just want somebody to sit down with them and say, look, just breathe, we can fix this. But it's really kind of unpicking, you know, their life and seeing, okay, what can we do to manage that? How can we reduce your stress? Because we have to prioritize our health, don't we? And you can't, you know, it's all very well saying, well, I'm too busy. But, you know, there will come a day where you will have to prioritize your health, because you will probably get ill if you don't manage your stress. So even if you can just 10 minutes a day, I'd say to people, block that out in your diary. And even if you just go and sit somewhere and do some deep breathing, or you sit in a window and drink a cup of tea, or go for a 5-minute walk, it's making that time in your day to just have time for yourself.
And I think, you know, when we are busy and we've got everything going on and our health is just kind of coasting along, we kind of take it all for granted. It's only when something does go wrong that we then realize, if I don't have my health, I can't do that work. I can't spend time with these people. You know what I mean? Every other area of life falls down and you very quickly realize, oh, my health should be my priority because it's what allows you to do everything else. But sometimes we have to get to that sort of burnout or, you know, stage before we come to that realization. And I think that's where if we can catch ourselves earlier on and try to build in, you know, 10 minutes, you know, of movement and 10 minutes of, you know, stress-free, maybe it's breathing or breath work or meditation or, you know, some type of stress management, slowly over time and make those habits, then when it gets to time where we're going through these transitions and we're entering menopause, we're going to be much better off, you know, facing it with less symptoms than kind of feeling like a truck's hitting us, you know, one go.
Yeah, so true. It's about, it's prevention, isn't it? Looking after yourself so that you don't experience, you know, being ill or having any of these chronic diseases. And it's interesting, actually, in going back to research that they've seen, if a woman goes into perimenopause in a healthy state, she's more likely not to experience, you know, so many menopausal symptoms. How much weight that you carry on the body is a big factor in how you will experience the menopause. That's actually been shown that if you're carrying more weight, that you most likely will have worse menopausal symptoms, hot flashes and all of those things. So it's all about looking after yourself, isn't it? On a daily basis, it's about our daily habits. What we do every day is what mounts up to our overall wellness and well-being.
And I think that's where, especially as women, we get so busy, you know, having to do the things we have to do and then looking after other people, whether or not, you know, that's our kids or, you know, parents or whoever, that we put ourselves, you know, on that ladder right down the bottom after everybody else, then we'll get to ourselves. And I think that's where we need to try to change that mindset, you know, and we talk about, you know, when you're on the airplane, you have to put your oxygen mask on first before the next person. Essentially, that's what we need to do our whole life. We really need to look after us, you know, and everyone's heard it over and over. You know, if you look after yourself, you'll have more energy to give to others. But it really rings true. And I think when we start to get to perimenopause and menopause, if we haven't started, you know, to do that already, then it catches up with us really quickly.
Yeah, totally agree. You have to put yourself first. You just have to do that. And I think we're carers, aren't we, women? We care for everybody. And, you know, you have to care for yourself. And it is actually okay to say no. You know, I that is something that I've was terrible with. I'm a yes person. I say yes to everything. But I've learned as I've aged that I actually say no now. And it's such a wonderful feeling. You know, obviously you say it very nicely and, you know, you're not upsetting anybody, but it's actually okay just to say, no, I'm sorry, I can't do that. Or no, you know, that doesn't work for me. It's okay. You don't have to say yes and you don't have to help everybody. You know, prioritize your, make sure, you know, there's that expression, isn't it, that make sure that your cup is full first before you start giving to everybody else, because it's very, very important. I think I totally agree that women, we neglect ourselves, you know, with self-care. We're looking after our children. We're looking after everyone, which is, of course, is great. But we also need to look after ourselves with just small things that make a big difference. You know, do what works for you. Do what you enjoy.
And I think sometimes that can be, you know, a learning curve for women. I think often, you know, we look at our sort of self-care as a luxury, you know, like that exercise class that I'm paying for, that's a luxury. I don't need, you know, that. But, you know, if that's what's going to motivate you to have time to work out every week and feel good about yourself, you know, mentally and physically, then it's an investment. So it's really changing and reframing that it's not a luxury, that it's an investment in yourself to do these things.
Yeah, Totally. It's really interesting, actually, how when you look at different cultures in the world, where talking about menopause, when women are thought of, you know, they're looked up to in our society, in the Western world, menopause is this big kind of aura of negativity attached to it. But in the these other cultures where women, when they've gone through menopause and they're in postmenopause, they're really looked up to. You know, they're thought of as being the wise people. They're the ones that are running the villages. You know, it's all very positive. They don't experience menopausal symptoms like we do in the Western world.
Well, that's kind of enough said right there, isn't there? Like, really? And again, you know, going back to that, they're not going to be having, you know, those processed foods or is, you know, that sort of rushing life. And, you know, that's going to be much slower, much sort of, you know, focused on that holistic living overall, which then has the flow on effects to the symptoms you experience or don't experience.
Mm. Yeah, it's so much to do. I always like to say you've got to get, you know, it's like a jigsaw puzzle. When you're looking at wellness during menopause, you've got to get all the pieces in place. You know, you can't just do one of them. You know, you have to look at nutrition, as we've been talking about. You need to look at your lifestyle. What do I do on a daily basis? What habits do I have that aren't beneficial for my health? And then mindset, you know, how am I looking at this next phase in my life? You know, it's shown that if you have a positive outlook, which I appreciate isn't always easy, but look at something with a positive outlook, you will experience it better. And then in the jigsaw, you've also got hormone replacement therapy, if that's something that you want to look at. So all of those pieces really can help you considerably, you know, experience the menopause transition and just glide through it.
Mm. And they're all going to complement each other, essentially. You know, if you're dialing in the lifestyle and then you decide to explore HRT, you're probably going to get, you know, better benefits from it because you've dialed in the lifestyle and vice versa.
Yeah, absolutely. You can't, you know, there's no silver bullet. You can't just have one of these pieces and think, well, I'll just do that bit, but the others I won't bother. No, you need to do them all to get the maximum benefit, because unfortunately there isn't, you know, it's multifactorial. You can't just do one thing.
As much as we would often like just to pop a pill or, you know, do one thing once, it doesn't work that way, unfortunately. Now, when we come to the end of the podcast, I always like to ask my guests that for listeners listening in, if there's one thing that they could do after listening to this podcast, what would it be?
One thing. Wow, that's difficult. One thing that I think that people should think about doing that will have the maximum benefit on their health at this time in their lives, I would say to look at blood sugar management that we spoke about, reducing refined carbohydrates, really focusing on eating real food. That is a big thing. But that will give you a huge result if you do that.
Mm, I love it. It's simple, like, you know, in the thought of process of it. And, you know, maybe you just need to open up your fridge, you know, have a look in there, see the types of food. Is it things that, you know, are in boxes and packets and containers, or is it more whole foods? And then maybe this week, you know, try to buy some different colored vegetables or different colored fruits and really bump up some of those, you know, whole foods when you're going to do your weekly shop.
Yeah, it's all about small steps, isn't it? And like you say, just swapping something out. Look at what's on your plate. You know, taking away the carbohydrates, the chips or the white rice, and just filling that piece of the plate up with vegetables instead.
Mm. Sounds delicious just thinking about it, actually. Now, where can listeners reach out and connect with you?
Yeah, the best place to find me really is on my website, which is www.alisonbladh.com. I'm on virtually all social media. If you just look for Alison Blard, you can find me on virtually all platforms. And then I've actually got a really nice ebook And this is actually very appropriate for what we've discussed, because it's a 7-day meal plan with shopping list and everything. So this is a meal plan to really boost your body and brain and give you energy. And it's very easy to follow, very, very easy recipes, because I appreciate no one's got time to spend in the kitchen. So that, you know, you can download for free. So maybe I could send you the link for your listeners.
Perfect. Well, I'll link that all up in the show notes. So listeners, if you want to grab that free guide, head on over to the Mind Movement Health podcast show notes and you'll be able to grab it there. Well, thank you so much, Alison, for coming on. I always love chatting to, you know, someone with a sort of similar outlook on health as, you know, I have. And I think learning all about how we can better look after ourselves as we age is really important. So thanks again for coming on.
Oh, thank you, Kate. It's been lovely talking to you. Thank you for having me.
Thanks for listening into the podcast. Please hit subscribe to be updated for each time we release a new podcast.